Welcome to MedEvidence, where we help you navigate the truth behind medical research with unbiased, evidence-proven facts, powered by Encore Research Group and hosted by cardiologist and top medical researcher, Dr. Michael Corrin.
Hello, I'm Dr. Michael Corrin. I'm a cardiologist and I'm the host of MedEvidence. And today we have Dr. Alpa Patel sitting next to me, who has been sharing this fascinating story with us about her father, who was diagnosed with oral cancer and went through this process of considering major surgery that could potentially cure his oral cancer issue, but then perhaps leave him without the enjoyment of life, meaning mostly the ability to eat normally and to consume and cook and be part of the whole culinary experience. He had some previous history of having a peptic ulcer problem that was treated with this very unorthodox surgery that left his GI tract in a little bit of a different state than most of us. Yeah. And he was diagnosed with oral cancer by his dentist, and he went through a series of consultations with different physicians, ultimately landed on a CO2 laser treatment for his lesion, which worked for a while, but then he had a recurrent that was even larger than the original problem. And then he was advised to do palliative radiation. The palliative radiation wasn't the best thing in the world. Right. He had some complications of that. And there was a discussion about moving to overall palliative care, where it was just going to be about comfort without any aggressive measures at all. Right. But then he responded to the radiation. So you had this very interesting decision to make where, all right, well, this was unexpected. Do we change our gear and go back to a more aggressive approach? Yeah. Or do we just go back to this comfort model? So why don't you pick up the story from there?
So in January, when we had our follow-up, again, like I said, we were ready to go into full-blown hospice care, but this almost 50% improvement shocked all of us. So my dad decided to go through another round. However, I had a discussion with the radiation oncologist. I felt like the way they did the radiation was very aggressive for him. It was twice a day for 2 days in a row, four treatments over 2 days. And they say that they do that. They call it quad chop therapy.
Quad chop.
Quad chop. They do that for palliation because a lot of patients treated at Mayo come from other parts of the country. This way they have shorter stays and they can get treated and leave. Well, I said, we live 15 minutes down the road. Can we make his a little shorter duration, extend it out longer, and see if he would tolerate this better?
Now, was that received well, having this doctor butt in on their protocols?
Well, so the doctor looked at me and said, this was the protocol. I didn't write the protocol. This is how we do the protocol.
And very rigid. Sounds like a very rigid mentality.
I said, I get it. He said, the studies were done like that. I said, why did they do this? He said, I don't know. I didn't write the study. He kind of got a little, I think, aggravated at me at that point. And I said, well, I don't think he can tolerate that. He didn't tolerate it well. He ended up in the hospital, and we don't want to do that. So he said, I'm going to step out for a while and go talk to my technicians and come back to you guys. So I thought I had just... He wasn't even going to come back in the room at this point. And the other thing I asked was for them to split it up and to hydrate him in between over there instead of us having to run to the hospital. So he came back with a great approach. He said, well, we'll do this. We'll do him on a Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I'm going to give him this much less radiation. I'm going to, now that the tumor shrunk 50%, we're going to hone in into it a little bit more so that we don't have other tissues we affect. And we'll give him a rest on Saturday and Sunday. We'll hydrate him over the weekend, provide that nutritional support. And we'll do this again on Monday, Tuesday of the following week. We were like, great, we'll try this.
So that's I love that little anecdote for a number of reasons. One is that you use your knowledge as a physician and your authority as being knowledgeable and serving your family's interest to change something that most people would not have been able to do, quite frankly. But the other thing is that it highlights the difference between a protocol and clinical medicine. So obviously we live in the world of protocols running clinical trials, and they're very, very important. And they're extremely important in clinical trials because you have to do everything the same for every patient to determine whether the thing works.
Right.
But once you know the thing works, then you should have some leeway.
Right.
And so some people get stuck on the idea, okay, well, it was developed by protocol, and if there's any leeway or any change, it may be wrong or maybe off or maybe doing some horrible thing. Well, probably not, because again, the clinical trial proved something, and then the way you implement that is something else. And I'm bringing that up because that's a core issue with MedEvidence Platform, is to help people understand that the clinical world is complex. There's a lot of nuances. There are different sensibilities that you have to appeal to as a clinician, and it should absolutely be based on science. But once you have that scientific basis, then it's okay to tweak things a little bit with that knowledge, knowing that the underlying intervention is valid.
Right.
And that's different than so many things where the underlying intervention has never been proven. Right. So anyhow, sorry for that diversion.
That's okay.
But this is my area of passion, as you know.
And a lot of their studies were done in a lot younger patients than my dad. I think 80 plus year old patients were not even in those studies that he was talking about. So you have to change parameters or protocols based on a patient's health status, age, functional mobility. So I'm glad that he was able to help us with that. Well, this next round, unfortunately, my dad got
even worse. So this is now the Alpa Patel protocol.
Yeah, my protocol failed us miserably. So he got to the point where he developed severe pain, mucositis, oral thrush. He wasn't tolerating anything. I luckily was able to work with a home health agency and set up IV fluids at home. He became so frail that he actually fell in the shower at home on February 13th. So he got admitted to Mayo. They told us that really there's nothing else we can do for your dad. We have no other therapies to offer you. And we knew that at that point. They said, we just need to make him comfortable. He maybe has a month or two left. And they told us all this, you know, flat out. We were willing. We knew. We accepted it. My dad still looked at them and said, I'm going to be around for a while. As frail as he was, he'd lost 30 pounds in a month and had fallen. Luckily, he hadn't fractured anything. And so we said to the doctor, can you provide some nutrition support? Because I really think a lot of this is the radiation side effects. And because the mucositis and the thrush, I believed, was mostly from that. And they said, we won't do TPN in his health status. He doesn't want a feeding tube. We're just going to send your dad to a rehab facility to see what can be done.
Now, was he enrolled in palliative care at that point?
No, we enrolled in the hospice palliative program after that discharge.
Okay.
He went to rehab to see if they could get him stronger. And they did a fantastic job there. They provided some of the nutritional support. They did physical therapy for 3 hours a day, including speech therapy that got his mouth open now without pain.
Very nice.
Was able to start eating and drinking there. The doctor had told us that if this round of radiation would work, you would know that about 8 weeks whether it had helped. Mm. And last week was at 8 weeks, and my dad is eating normally now.
Wow.
He's walking around the house sometimes even without his walker. He's getting stronger. He's gained 6 pounds since he's now been home for a month. And so I think this whole 3-4 month ordeal has kind of helped us.
Kudos to our rehab
colleagues. I don't know when everything will start over again. And at that point, he's not going to get any more radiation now. Mm-hmm. He said he finally has even told us that he doesn't want any more treatments.
So he's now in a full palliative care program.
He's actually in full hospice care now because we've stopped treatments. We are not going to get any more radiation because the side effects from the radiation were unbearable.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I believe that has helped him, we're just hoping that this will keep him comfortable for a while. His cancer recurred after 3 years the last time. If it keeps him comfortable even for a year or whatever, at least he's enjoying what time he has left.
And he's eating now.
He's eating. He's really enjoying that.
Well, that's great. He lives to eat.
That's his whole goal was. When he went in to see the doctor the first time, he said, what can you do to get my mouth open?
Mm-hmm. Fabulous. So he's actually in a pretty good place at the moment.
correct.
And involved in hospice care, as you mentioned.
Yeah, so he's still pretty frail from the amount of weight he's lost, and his mobility is not the best. So we have CNAs that help come bathe because we don't want another fall in the shower. But my mom's willing to help. My mom's youngest brother has moved in with us and has been helping us quite a bit with my dad. And now he's getting to the point where he wants to try to do too much. And so we're like, you need to take a break, not fall again.
So that's so interesting. Well, I'm so happy to hear that he's doing well.
Thank you. I'm so happy
to hear the process has played out successfully for him.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very curious from your standpoint as a clinician, how did this change the way you approach decision making when it came to palliative care? Obviously, you had to deal with this many, many times before your dad. So just share some of those maybe changes in the way you think about things.
I think we need to be upfront and honest with what we're wanting out of this. Just like when we went in with this, my dad basically, they asked him, what do you want from this? And he said, I want you to get my mouth open. And I think we need to hear that in the patient's words. What do you want out of this? Yes, you have a terminal condition. Yes, most likely you're probably going to die from this in a year or two or whatever. But during this time, what do you want from us? And when we hear that as physicians, then it helps us better guide how we direct their care.
Yeah, let the patient set the goal.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard sometimes for doctors.
It's very hard, yeah. Mm.
You know, we're so used to setting the goals.
Yeah.
And we're used to studying and thinking about
and following
the world.
Protocols.
Right, following our protocols and setting the goals. And we typically have a measure of success in our brains that may or may not be the patient's measurement of success.
Yeah.
So that's a great point that spending the time to figure out what the patient goal is is extraordinarily important.
Yeah.
And have you had experiences where you were able to apply that in your practice since your experience with
I
your dad?
I think so. I mean, honestly, you know, since we've been going through this process, I see a lot of patients that are over 80, I mean, and I see them struggling with just activities of daily living. And I've discussed more of the palliative options with them and their families since what we've been through, because there's been a lot of support we've been given in the home by hospice, just in accepting this whole process. And I think it's helped me become a clinician where I feel like I can make these changes in my patients a lot sooner than later.
Yeah. Well, that fascinating story. So in our next session, we're going to switch gears a little bit. And we're going to put on our clinical trial hats.
Okay.
And so you shared a lot of very personal stuff today, and I really do appreciate that.
Thank you.
And with that background, I want to now flip the switch a little bit, and now we're going to be cold clinicians that are just setting up protocols and talking about this from a public health standpoint.
Sure.
But not forgetting what you just shared with the audience.
Okay.
Thanks for joining the MedEvidence podcast. To learn more, head over to medevidence.info or subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcast platform.